This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Good afternoon, everybody. You're at Joy 94.9. Sorry, I just had a moment where I got a little bit nervous. My name's Hilary McNevin. You're on Cravings. You're on Joy 94.9. I'm filling in today for Pete Dillon and we're talking chefs. We've got chefs galore from the Immersary in the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival. It's International Women's Day. It's Melbourne Food and Wine. There's a lot to talk about. Happy Cravings and happy we go. Thanks a lot for joining us. We are absolutely talking cravings and we're talking chefs, kitchens, restaurants and immersaries today here on Cravings on Joy 94.9. I have to apologise for my nervous introduction. I think I was taken aback for a moment because it's always such a pleasure to sit in Pete Dillon's seat and hopefully do him the honour of, and do him proud, I should say, of sitting in on his great show that's on every Saturday from 1 to 2. Now today, we're in the thick of the Food and Wine Festival and I have some of the chefs in studio and another on the phone from the Immersary Kitchen. Now, the Immersary is the hub of the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival. It's an extraordinary construction that is in Queensbridge Square by the river for the 17 days of the festival from the 28th of Feb to the 16th of March. And a group of, I think, about seven chefs have gotten together to create extraordinary menus, food, but we're going to talk all about that. I'd like to introduce a couple of them to start with. Firstly, Adam Liston. Welcome.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
And also Joel Alderson.
Hello.
Now, Adam, I'll give everyone a little bit of a briefing about who you are. You and Joel, I've got you on together first because you're collaborators of a concept space called Borrowed Space.
Yep.
Is that correct?
Yep.
And you're also the owner, co-owner and head chef of Northern Light on Smith Street.
Yep.
Which has only been happening
about 6 weeks now.
6 weeks now? How's it going?
Yeah, it's good. It's busy.
Yeah?
It's been really, really good.
That's good. And Joel, you are the executive chef of the Hotel Windsor.
Correct.
In the city.
Yes.
And how long have you been doing that role?
Probably say about 5 or 6 months now.
How's that going?
Yeah, good. It's challenging, but we're going in the right direction.
Good. Well, I want to get onto those two roles soon enough, but first let's talk about the Immersary. Adam, can you tell us firstly, are the two of you in the Immersary as Borrowed Space or are you in the Immersary as Northern Light in the Windsor?
No, we're in the Immersary's Borrowed Space.
Okay, so how did the two of you get this gig, basically?
I think Joe approached us at first about just being involved. Borrowed Space is doing a fair few events. We come with a couple in Richmond and some random stuff in East Brunswick.
Yeah.
So, she just approached us to come on board with a bunch of these other guys and sort of create an idea that would fit into the Immersary. So that's what we did under the Borrowed Space name and just try to fit in.
Take us a step back before the Windsor and Northern Light existed, Borrowed Space. What is Borrowed Space? And when you say events, what are they? Joel, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think Borrowed Space has started because we both wanted to have a bit of fun with the career that we've chosen.
Where were you before Borrowed Space happened?
So I was just kind of consulting for the Windsor.
Yes. You've also worked at Attica and the Royal Mail, places like that.
Yeah, so kind of I went on into the Windsor to try and look at it with fresh eyes from a restaurant background. But, that's such a big operation. It was quite at times it was quite daunting and a lot of stress and stuff, so we wanted to have a bit of fun as well on nights. And I think we constructed or put Borrow Space together to something we would like to do on our Monday or whatever, like it being chefs and enjoying a bit of a party atmosphere.
So you wanted
to
work on your day off.
Yeah, pretty much. But, you know, had some fun as well. Like, so there was plenty of, you know, music was a huge part of Borrowed Space. We always had a DJ and stuff.
Okay.
And kind of just we set out to give people a unique experience and ourselves have some fun at the same time.
So what was one of the, Adam, tell us one of the events that you had
We did our first event at Swan Street Social, the little bar upstairs from Noir.
Yes.
And that was just Pete, the owner of that restaurant, was pretty giving with his time, and he was quite supportive of the fact that we were trying to do something.
Yep.
So he offered us the space for, I think it was about a month. We did four or five events upstairs that were all pretty successful.
And were they sit down dinners?
They were and they weren't. There was no real rules involved with it, which was pretty something that I think we made a big point of.
Yes.
We just wanted to cook food that we wanted to eat.
Yeah,
and we wanted to do it in an environment that was a little bit random.
I have to ask, what do you, when you say you want to cook food that you want to eat, what are two things you always want to eat? Like the two things that you both put on the menu straight away and went, this is the sort of food we're doing?
One of the dishes that we did first was an eel dish, which is, you know, smoked eel.
Yum.
Squid sauce and grapes. And I think one of your first ones was, I remember the carrot cake, which was awesome.
Tell us about the carrot cake.
So it was just kind of, I hate to use the word, but deconstructed kind of carrot cake.
Yeah.
So all the components that I remember eating that my mum used to cook.
Yep.
But doing that just as a plated dessert.
So okay.
It was food that wasn't too complex, but it was...
It's playful, isn't it?
Yeah, playful enough to stimulate, you know, a chef or hospitality crowd.
Yes.
But again, not too serious at all.
So when you were approached, obviously, by Joe Moody from the Food and Wine Festival, and what do you tell us about what you're presenting at the Immersary?
She just approached us with a theme. The water theme was pretty challenging at first because obviously we didn't know what we were dealing with in terms of setup of the kitchen and the other guys were doing and you know the format. You know, they were talking about catering for quite big numbers, which is something that I guess I hadn't done before.
Yep.
So, the brief was pretty interesting. And also not knowing what the other boys were doing, you know, you always want to sort of get a feel for what the other chefs are doing so that you know you're on the same page.
So was there a communication between all of you? Was it either via email or did you ever get a chance to sit around a table, all of you?
Most of that communication was done with Joel. I was actually in Margaret River when a lot of that was happening. So me and Joel were sort of talking on the phone and I was CC'd in on all the emails and the briefs and stuff. And we had a fair bit of time to think about it. And together we just sort of came up with an idea and I think what we came up with was pretty good.
So tell us about the food. I know there's an interesting dumpling dish that you've got that's going crazy, you were saying before. Just tell us a couple of the dishes people can expect down there. From you guys.
Yeah, so I guess the brief was just to use water. So we all sat down originally, the chefs, and threw around a few ideas. Mm-hmm. And first of all, we was like to do numbers. We thought of like, you know, kind of a dumplings is something you can do en masse and use water quite a lot, obviously steam.
Mm-hmm.
And then
did anyone else take that idea though? Did someone, one of the other chefs, come along and go, "Damn, he took the steam dumpling idea."
No. So we're all doing those. So it was like a kind of a group thing.
Oh, even better. Yeah.
So we thought that would be something we could recreate and keep it consistent as well for big numbers.
Yeah.
So we all just took a protein or a ingredient to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, we thrashed around some ideas, and Adam and I, being Borrowed Space, having a bit of fun, we kind of reinvented the Reuben sandwich as a dumpling.
Okay.
So all the ingredients, a rye wrapper instead of a normal wrapper.
Yeah.
And also just using flinazon wallaby tail, something that a lot of people aren't using, and made a soup dumpling out of that.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so just having a bit of fun with it. That was our ideas.
That sounds brilliant. Will you guys stick around and we can talk a little bit more about this after this break?
Sure.
Awesome. Thanks. We'll be back soon.
Joy 94.9.
Hello, it's Hilary McNevin sitting in for Pete Dillon on Cravings today from 1 till 2 o'clock. We just listened to a song called Given the Chance by Kite String Tangle. And look, I've got some great chefs in here today into the studio. And if you want to contact us and ask them any questions, SMS us on 0427JOY949 or email onair@joy.org.au. I'm sure, they're open to a million questions about cooking and chefing and that crazy world that it is. But I have a very, very special guest on the phone, and it is the one and only Mr. Cravings himself, Pete Dillon.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm having a little break.
You are? You're live from the Langham Hotel, aren't you?
Yes, I'm actually standing up on the level 25, overlooking the water, of course, water being the theme of the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival for this year.
Are you having a quiet ciggy?
No.
Not at all. That's fine. You know,
who suggested that? Who's looking? Who
saw that? That's it. Look over there. What's that shiny bright thing? What's going on at the masterclass today, Pete?
Well, there's a couple of people, I reckon, Hill, that you'd be very interested to see. In one of the rooms, Jean-Louis Fernandez from Afiance, one of the international superstars that are here for the festival.
Yep.
He's got a beautiful focus about sustainability when it comes to seafood and and using all of the products. So he makes seafood small goods with offcuts that aren't suitable to serve as prime cuts.
Fantastic. Can you give us a couple of examples, though, of what he's using?
No, because I wasn't actually in the session, but it's somebody I know that you would love. Who did have this morning was Donovan Cook from The Atlantic here in Melbourne. Another man who's got a really strong interest in sustainability, and he did a beautiful salmon dish. But he's somebody that sort of is nose to tail, as far as using fish and seafood goes. So, a beautiful salmon dish he made that he cooked, 50 degrees in olive oil. It was all very splendid. Mm-hmm. But just knowing how he uses the different parts of the fish and what he uses them for, a really, really clever use of the product.
Of the entire salmon, for example?
Yeah. So the entire salmon, the skin got used, the belly got used, the prime cuts, obviously, the middle part of the salmon got used.
Yeah.
Obviously, the bones and head and stuff you boil down for a stock, but then the skin got used and crushed and made into a textural element for a dish.
Oh, how lovely.
Yeah, so every part of the fish is being used, so there's very little wastage because they are incredibly expensive to purchase, this whole fish. So
I think that's an interesting... Has that come up at all, or did it come up with Donovan, the price of seafood?
Yeah, look, it has. And what he was really sort of talking about was, he used some kingfish in one dish. He made a tartare with kingfish, and he actually suggested that if you can't get kingfish, you need to buy a fish that is sustainable. So he's given a whole bunch of examples. Swordfish is a no-no because it's not a sustainable fish. So, they're really sort of there to educate. As much as they're there to entertain and inform, they're there to educate our participants as well.
And how's the attendance there, Pete? Is it chockers?
Oh, the attendance is great. All of the rooms are full. So there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 rooms. Mm-hmm. So the big room, the Clarendon room downstairs, that's being hosted by our gorgeous friend Alistair McLeod, who we catch up with on the program on occasion from Brisbane.
Yes.
And that's where Jean-Louis was this morning. Before him, my food crush for the 2014 festival, of course, Johnny Yazzini from New York.
Is it true, the rumour that he blew a kiss to you on Facebook? Someone took a photo?
That rumour is absolutely true.
So it's not a rumour.
He was having dinner with somebody and blew me a kiss.
Oh. So,
I've just finished a session with Shane D'Elia from Maha, also here in Melbourne.
Dear Shane, how's he going?
Yeah, really good. And again, some seafood dishes where he was able to talk about. He's just done a tour through Turkey, the second series of his TV show, Spice Story, will be on. It's in post-production.
Yes.
So he presented some of the stuff that he learned in and around the Black Sea in Turkey. It was a really lovely presentation. I've got a Greek woman this afternoon, Mary Bale, also a Melbourne woman.
Yes. She's written some great books, hasn't she?
Yeah, she's written beautiful books. And then I'm finishing with Ryan Squires, who's here from Brisbane, from Esquire, and he's actually going to kill a fish in the middle of the room.
Wow.
So I believe there will be bloodshed and murder this afternoon on the dance floor.
What sort of fish is he killing?
I think that's still a secret. I'm not allowed to know that.
As long as it's not a shark or a swordfish or a tuna, we're happy.
No, it's not anything that is non-sustainable. And that's, I think, one of the underpinning ideals of the festival here, with it being a focus on water, that, we are surrounded by remarkable waterways, not just here but around the world. And chefs are going back to very old, almost ancient techniques, and they're using things that are in season and sustainable and available only at certain times of the year mm-hmm. when they should be used. And I think from an ecological and environmental point of view, it's a really good ideology that they're all talking about.
It's exciting. I think Ryan, that will be. I can't wait to hear about the Ryan Squires talk. I'm actually talking with him tomorrow. Some pictures? Put some pictures online.
Yeah, I'll get some pictures.
Some pictures. All right. And Ryan is in Chef Jam tomorrow. I'm moderating a talk with him tomorrow about the very subject of sustainability and seafood. Mm. And we've got our chefs. Oh, go on.
Mitch Tonks is here and John Sossman is with him. Oh, John, you would know another well-known fisherman who's got a really strong ideological focus to the way that he talks about fish and seafood
yes.
as well.
Well, he's not an advocate of the term sustainability, which I think is another really interesting angle. And, Australian waters as opposed to we should just look locally rather than globally. But it's all good fun and it's all making us think, I hope, and making us think about the choices we make at the counter when we buy our
that's
fish.
That's absolutely right. And that's, we don't go and buy fish in the supermarket. We go to a market where there are fishmongers who know about seasonality, who know about what is good, who know about what is sensible to be eating at the right time of the year.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, Pete, it sounds like a great adventure.
Hey, look, it's a wonderful adventure. This is year four for me, and I thoroughly enjoy every minute of it because my mind gets broadened, my understanding of what we're surrounded by and what we eat and how we eat and why we eat is always broadened. So it's just, look, it's a great experience and something that I'm chuffed that I can do and very chuffed that you can be in there with all of those lovely chefs having a good time as well.
Oh, it's great fun. We're all very happy they all say hello.
Well, I'll say hello back and I'll say goodbye because I know that you've got a lot to get through on the show. So
yeah, it's good fun.
Thanks for sitting in my chair for me.
Always a pleasure, darling. And you'll be back in the hot seat next week, won't you?
I will be back in the hot seat next week.
Can't wait to listen.
All right, take care.
You too.
Thanks, Hill.
Thanks, darling. And that was Pete Dillon, who actually is the founder and the usual host of Cravings on Saturday afternoons, and I have the honour and privilege of filling in for him when he can't be here. But I'm going to go back to our chefs, Joel and Adam, for a moment. Can we talk on that sustainability seafood subject for a moment? How do you utilise that in your kitchens? Is it something that is a worry or a concern or a motivator for
definitely.
You?
Definitely. Our menu is quite seafood-driven with a Japanese influence, so, we have to be really careful about how we...
And that's your menu at Northern Light. You've got a few menus going on at the moment.
Sorry,
Northern Light is at 102 Smith Street, am I correct?
Yep. Collingwood.
Yeah. And so what do you look out for when you are using seafood or buying seafood from your suppliers?
The big thing is, I think, I definitely can say, is education. I've just come back from Port Lincoln on a fishing tour where we went out to the tuna farms and kingfish farms and we're speaking to the fishermen and the guides and, the information that those guys pass on that a lot of people don't really understand about, with tuna and stuff is so interesting to the point where on our menus, I've got no problem putting tuna on the menu, knowing where it's come from.
Yes, because I think that, and that's something I was just about to ask you, because a lot of people black band tuna completely. I know Ryan Squires, for example, does. But yellowfin tuna, I know you've got on your menu, and I tried the dish and it was delicious.
Yeah.
But it was talked about. They talked about it being sustainably harvested.
Definitely. And
so, how do you basically translate that? What does that mean?
Well, we source fish that's basically been caught out to sea and then put into a pen and basically aged in a pen.
Okay.
So the quotas are completely legal. It's not wild fishing. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, the yellowfin that we're using is good, but bluefin farm tuna is probably the most primo product that you can get in the country, and if I can get my hands on that, I'm completely happy to serve that as well.
Oh, so you do use bluefin? I'm still wary of bluefin, but I could talk to you about this for another couple of hours, so maybe we'll do that on another show.
Definitely.
Because I honestly, and it's something I'm incredibly passionate about, but I still don't completely understand the systems they use with the bluefin tuna with. But I think it's really important if you go yourself as a chef. What about you, Joel? If you go as a chef to these farms and places, do you... do that, and can you do that for the Windsor in such a large environment?
Yeah, it's really important as a chef to get as much information as you can, so you can make informed decisions. And same as people at home as well, they need to research and make up their own minds. I think there's a lot of bad kind of press around fishing and sustainability and what is and what isn't. So everyone's got to make their own decision, and I feel personally that if you if you use a product, treat it with respect. Use everything you can.
Yes.
The whole idea of nose or tail is should be used with seafood as well and fish. Yeah. But for me, I had a tour late last year, just down to Tasmania with clam seafood, just to look at the salmon production. And being a Tasmanian boy, it always had a bit of a bad reputation of what was happening down there. But there's people that probably abuse the system, and people that, you know, make an effort to make it transparent and sustainable as well.
Yeah, and I think it's really important, the word you said, Adam, that a lot of people, I think as consumers, don't know is quota. Australia has, we are really rigid in our quotas, aren't we, in our seafood management. And I think, and that's why I think it's important we'll talk bluefin tuna another time, because I just, and like you're saying, there's people, that there are people, this is their jobs, so they need their jobs to be sustainable as well as the industry, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so I think, do you try to do any sustainable seafood and menus? Is that possible?
It is. It's also, certain products we know customers will buy.
Yeah.
So it's important consideration, but all decisions and, you know, menu items are considered for sustainability before we put them on as well. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Well, okay, we're going to have talk to Hamish Nugent from Tiny up in Bright, and then Florent Girardin, I hope I said your name correctly, is going to join us from Silo by Yoast, and we're going to keep talking all chefs and Melbourne Food and Wine Festival and sustainability.
Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Cravings on Joy 94.9. My name's Hilary McNevin, and I am filling in for the lovely Pete Dillon today, who is being basically the master of ceremonies in one of the rooms for the masterclass at the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival. I'm talking to four of the seven chefs who are involved in the immersary at the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival at Queensbridge Square today. And I'm really lucky to have on the line Chef Hamish Nugent. Hamish, hello.
How are you, Hilary?
Really well. How are you?
Very well.
Now, we'll let everyone, our listeners, know you and your partner, Rachel Reed, who is also a very accomplished chef, own Tani in Bright.
Yes, that's right.
You were awarded Best New Regional Restaurant at the Age Good Food Guide Awards last year, I remember.
Yeah, we're very lucky with that one.
Oh, we're very lucky. Yeah, the harder you work, the luckier you get. Did you know that?
And I hope so.
No, well deserved. And you also got a restaurant that you might not be having up in Dinner Plain. Can you tell us a bit about that one too?
So Dinner Plain's been there since 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And we run it from June to October.
Yes.
Basically inspired by Japanese food and technique. And at the moment, it's looking like my former sous chef will be taking that business on from this coming June.
Well, that's exciting. What's that called, Subo?
That's Subo, yeah.
T-S-U-B-O?
That's the one.
Okay, so we can keep an eye out and he'll... But will he be basically keeping the same, you know, the same thing?
So it'll all be running the same. It's just Sam will be putting his fingerprints onto it.
Okay, and you and Rachel can focus on Tani.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about Tani before we talk about the immersary.
Okay, so Tani's in Bright, as you just said. And Bright's a buzzy little tourist town. So today we've got Brighter Days car festival on, a few mountain bike downhill events on. So it's a real buzz this weekend.
Yeah.
So Tani's a 40-seat restaurant with a casual eatery.
Mm-hmm.
We're heavily influenced by Japan again, just like Subo. And we utilise as much local ingredients as possible.
You worked for a long time for Michael Ryan, didn't you, who's in Beechworth, who also is that where you found a lot of your inspiration for your love of Japanese food?
Yeah, it is. I started with Michael, I think, back in 2006. And then Michael and I both, I did Subo with Michael in 2007, and that's where the Japanese elements sort of came about.
Yeah, okay. And tell us about your involvement, you and Rachel. What are you doing for the immersary?
Okay, so the immersary, well, it's a bit of a chef collective, which is excellent.
Yeah.
So we've done each chef had to design two dumplings.
Mm-hmm.
Our one was poultry, so we did a duck and a chicken.
Yes.
And then another one then was a dish, and that's the... I can't even remember now.
Does anyone know what Hamish did?
It's a
Go
chicken
on.
Wing. That's what it is. It's a confit chicken wing with fermented vegetables and some citrus on there.
Confit chicken wing?
Yeah.
Okay, so did you cook that down in its own fat? Is that like...
Yes, that's the one. So first it's salted and then confit off and then deboned.
Yeah.
and then it's lacto-fermented vegetables on top of it.
Yeah. Do you do all that yourself, you're fermenting?
We do here, but it was all of the stuff that's done there at the Mercer has been taken over by a catering company.
How do you feel about that? I will ask the other chefs here. How do you feel when you create a dish and then hand it over, you basically hand one of your babies over to a larger group?
Look, it's the first time for us because we're normally based just doing small restaurant stuff.
Yeah.
So our dishes aren't really designed to be done for... I think the Immersary was aimed to do about 80,000, or they're expecting 80,000 diners.
Yes.
Over a 17-day period.
Yep.
That's well and truly out of our league. That's a totally different ballgame. So, you know, it's not exactly how we'd do things.
Yeah.
On the other hand, it'd be impossible to do dishes that...
Yeah. So it's a little bit of letting go, of like, as in it's not exactly how you would have liked it, I suppose, for want of a better description, but you have to let that go a little bit?
Yeah, I think you just have to let go of it a little bit and let it take its progression.
Joel, do you find the same sort of thing?
Yeah, definitely. It was a learning curve for Adam and I as well. And I understand the position that Peter Rowland Catering are in, definitely, because I wouldn't want to take on that project myself. So it's not nice to hand over a dish, but, you know, that's what we needed to do, and we've all got our own jobs and stuff anyway, so we can't be there doing producing every day. So we just had a tasting, and, you know, they were happy to listen to our critique, I guess, and our advice on the dishes. And again, we can't, you know, it's not a restaurant as per se, so we can't expect the same kind of product at the end of that.
No. Yeah. And I'll just bring Flo into the conversation from Silo by Yoast.
Good afternoon.
Hello, how are you? How did you feel about the translation, I suppose?
For me, it was even worse because I couldn't make it onto the tasting, so we gave away all the recipes, and then I had to ask Joel to pack me up for the tasting, so he was there for the tasting and on the phone with him, and he was sort of the only one I knew I could trust on tasting the dishes and making sure that they would be good, and so I've basically left it in Joel's hands and in Peter Rowland's hands. So but I've seen the result the other day when I went past and tried a couple of stuff, and it was actually pretty good. So
oh, that's good. Hamish, have you popped in as well, if you and Rachel can get down from Bryce?
Yes, we're in the kitchen last Tuesday.
Okay, for a dinner? Like, were you cooking dinner?
Yeah, my job was really is I just had to put food on a plate.
Okay.
That was pretty good.
And how was...
Different, but, I think the elements that we use in the restaurant are a little bit too complicated to be doing something on a large scale. So it's a good learning lesson for next time, just to maybe tone things back a little bit, make it a bit more, just based on flavour instead of technique.
User-friendly, perhaps. You know, that sort of user-friendly, that sort of something, like you're saying, make it basic on flavour than rather and sort of something that's easy to put together, would that be?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, Hamish, it's great to talk to you. Can you tell everyone the address of Tani?
Okay, so we're 100 Gavin Street, Bright.
Yes.
Victoria. Our phone number is 035750 1304.
And your website?
Website is tanieatdrink.com.au.
Really, I've been lucky enough to eat up there, so I can tell people when you're going through Bright, do stop in and say hi.
Excellent.
To Hamish and Rachel. I can. It's all good. And but thank you, and big hello to Rachel, and happy International Women's Day to Rachel. And thank you so much, and hopefully we'll be back down again at the Immersary before it shuts.
Excellent. Well, thanks, Julie, for having me on, and thanks, Joy FM.
Thanks so much. See you later.
Okay, bye-bye.
So we're going to come back and talk to you more, Flo, after the next break. Are you up for it?
Yeah, no problem.
Okay. Thank you. We'll be back in a moment.
Joy 94.9.
Hello, it's Hilary McNevin here. I'm sitting in for Pete Dillon this afternoon on Cravings on Joy 94.9. If you have any questions for Chef Flo, for Adam Liston, for Joel Alderson, please text in 0427-JOY-949 or email any questions to onair@joy.org.au. And Flo, I'm going to pick up the conversation with you now, because how did you come about being involved in the Immersary?
Same again. Joe gave me a call.
Yep.
And that's how we all started.
So Joe Moody sort of basically had a list.
That's it. Because obviously with yours being involved in all the previous in all the previous Melbourne Food and Wine, it was just easy for her to to come back into Silo to call us. And but my relationship with her was beside Silo, so it was just a great match. Basically, it was just a great opportunity to bring Silo back into the.
I should add that Joanne Moody is the program director of the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival, and does a great job of bringing. She's
fantastic
job of chefs from all over the world, basically. So tell us about Silo by Yoast. Tell us about what you do there every day and what's your ethos. It has quite a strong ethos, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, basically, for those who don't know what Silo is all about, Silo is one of the only waste-free cafe in the world. And it starts with, obviously, being waste-free, no plastic, no aluminium, and all that. All our waste goes into a composter. That composter creates compost that goes to the garden. We grow all the veg with it. Yours is having a lot of fun to use that compost and bring us some wild strawberries for the dinners every Saturday. Mm-hmm. Not this week, though.
Where does he grow them on his
property? In Mombolk, yeah. Mombolk, yeah. He's got a farm down there. He's got a big farm down there.
Yeah.
Which I still haven't been to, waiting for the invite.
Yeah. Yes,
he's definitely listening. Yeah, that's it. That's the reason why I'm just going for it.
Yeah, go for it. Invitation to the farm.
That's it. We're basically doing cafe operations morning, breakfast and lunch, 7 days a week. And I've started recently doing dinners every Saturday, which has been really successful because of the space that we've got.
Yep.
It's like a big communal table, basically in the kitchen.
Wow.
So it makes it really comfy and really just...
How do you eating. Feel about that?
It's great.
You like being, you like having customers close by?
Oh, it's brilliant.
Yeah?
Yeah.
No, it's interesting because I was talking to some chefs the other day about, and they Cutler & Co., and they have a very open kitchen, and they talked about having... someone to come in, but their waiters, one of their managers actually trained them in how to be a waiter.
Yeah.
Just to help them deal with the customers. Do you find, Joel, do you prefer open or closed kitchens?
Definitely open. It's nice to see what's happening in the dining room.
So I love that. I love hearing that.
I can vouch. I went to Flo's dinner a couple of weeks ago and it was great. Like, he's quite a personable guy, so it's good to have him looking after you. And it's a bit of fun. Everyone kind of chats to each other. You meet a few new people you sit next to.
Yes.
So it's good.
You'll get your cash at the end, Joel.
Yeah. The check's in the mail. And he's a legend too. So a lot of people would want to sit in the... Everyone, Flo, told me earlier that he's a DJ and a legend. And a chef. He's a very versatile man.
Multitasking.
And tell us more about you getting in the immersary, working with these guys. What's your dish that you put forward?
So in the theme of the dumpling, we've got a few signature dishes at Silo, but I took two of them. One of them is the eggplant miso.
Yes.
Once again, like I think all of us chefs are very influenced by the Japanese food, but I have to spend a month or two a year in Tokyo because it's my favorite city in the world. So obviously, yep. Japanese food is always going to be in the food that I do. So eggplant and miso dumpling. And then for dinner, we've got our signature sort of fermented brown rice risotto and the quinoa salad. Obviously, I put my hand up to do all the vegetarian dishes and all the gluten-free, lactose-free and all that.
Is that because of what Silo offers?
Well, that's our bread and butter at Silo. You know, Silo is really focused onto that direction. So we really make food for all that by using only Australian products. Obviously, we're going to the rice, the quinoa, the buckwheat. We grind our own flour to make the bread. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all very organic and very
Do you have off-premises sites to do that, or is that all done in the kitchen?
It's all done in the kitchen. It's really tiny, so it's really challenging.
Yeah, and when how long have you been in Australia now?
4.5 years now.
What brought you out here?
Shannon.
Okay. Yeah. And that's Shannon Bennett.
That's it. Yeah. So I spent three something years at Vidamon.
Yes.
Back in the old on Little Collins. And then Corey and I helped Shannon opening the new one. And
And you found Yoast? How did, they're very different.
But what happened is Yoast has always been doing all the flowers for Shannon.
Yes.
So every time we had functions or even at the restaurant, Yoast was always sort of around doing the flowers, doing the decorations when we needed some.
Yeah.
And I don't know, from the first time I met Yoast, we clicked straight away and it was just like we had mutual respect that was here and it was great. It was good. As soon as I left Vidamon, he was one of the first person that I gave a call to. Matt Stone actually was the first person that I gave a call to.
Yeah, tell and everyone. Yeah, Matt Stone's from Greenhouse.
Yeah,
yes?
That's it. Yeah, yeah. So it was just natural to go from Vue to Yoast.
And so the is it But it sounds like a completely different operation. And but is that part of being a chef, I suppose, the flexibility you have to sort in and out? So what do you miss anything about the sort of structure of a place like Vuitton?
No, I think it's important for a chef to be able to reinvent yourself every now and then. And when I first arrived at Silo, I was kind of scared about the whole no waste and everything. Mm-hmm. And on my first day, I looked around and I was like, okay, I've got no cling film, I've got no grease proof, no aluminium foil, no sous vide cooking, which I used to call myself an expert about.
Yep.
But so I basically went back to basics. So all it is re-teaching myself how to cook a chicken in an oven without putting it in the bag and knowing exactly what the core temperature should be for it, you know, so it's great.
That would be a wonderful challenge.
Yeah,
it would. Has it improved your cooking?
Well, it's changed it, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Improve, I don't know, but I think it's, all of us chefs, we all tend to go very loose when you start creating dishes. We all sort of lose the meaning of it, if that makes sense. When we start creating dishes, we can go without any limits, but at Silo, because we know where the limits are to start with, that's basically helping us to focus a lot more onto what we do without going too crazy with the creativity, if that makes sense.
Yeah, okay, so your structure is very strong.
That's
so
it.
And the ingredients you use obviously are very specific.
Yeah.
So I mean, we're coming from France to Australia, and it's a very sort of typical question, but how do you find overall the produce here? Can you compare?
Yeah, of course. Well, on top of that, between France and Australia, I was in Singapore for 4 years.
Yes.
And obviously in Singapore, there is nothing growing. Everything is imported. So when I first arrived in Australia, that was the first thing I noticed. The quality of the product that we've got in Australia is just amazing.
Who are some of your favorite producers that you guys buy from?
David Blackmore.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Tell us, tell our listeners a bit about him.
David Blackmore is the big Wagyu man. So he's the only man that has got 100% pure blood Wagyu in Australia.
Yes.
And he told me, he came for dinner 2 weeks ago. Ben came in for dinner. And they told me as well that they are completely sustainable as well. So all the grain that they use to feed the cows for 650 days are grains that would normally not be consumed by human beings. So they get all the trimmings and all the stuff that they would normally put in the trash.
Yes.
So yeah, it's great. And if you've never tried David Blackmore, it's just piece of meat that tastes like butter.
Yeah.
That's basically what it is.
It's it. And cutting into it is a bit the same as well, isn't it? So what night are you on? When can people come and eat your food at the Immersary?
At the Immersary every day, Tuesday night from 6 to 8.30.
So they can eat it every day, these dishes you told us about.
That's right.
But from 6 to 8.30 on Tuesday, what happens? Is there a dining room, a dining space?
Be there. That's it.
That's great. And Adam and Joel, when are you... I've got Adam not with a microphone at the moment. So, Joel, if you could speak for both of you. When are you guys there?
Adam and I are there Monday the 10th for the evening.
So can people come and chat to you? Or, you know, like when Hamish was just saying before, he was plating up food. So basically you're there and people can come and chat, ask questions about your businesses and things like that?
Yeah, I think so. If they want to, they can come and have a chat.
Do you want to encourage that? You know, I'm not – you might be busy working. I don't know.
Don't know about you guys, but I've got loads of business cards to chat around.
Come and get a business card from Flo the Legend DJ.
That's it.
Yes. You have a DJ card and a Legend card and a chef card.
Yeah, that's right. I go with the Flo, isn't it?
Yeah. So, and basically you're there to help with the service.
And just kind of, put what we're doing with Borrowed Space and, you know, discuss that with people and let them know what's happening.
But please, if you could let our listeners know where they can find out more about Borrowed Space.
On the website. We have a website. Was it Borrowed Space Projects? Yep.
Would you ever do a private party or anything like that if you had time?
We did actually do a few last year with a promotions company.
Yeah.
So a couple of interesting briefs they gave us, and we just for between, you know, 15 and 25 people, I think.
Great.
It was good fun, yeah.
And Windsor Hotel is the other place you're at, and people can go to the Hotel Windsor
website? Come in and see what's happening there.
Yeah, and Adam, can you run around to a microphone and let everyone know the Northern Light website and your details?
So it's www.northernlightbaroneery.com, and it's just on 102 Smith Street, Collingwood.
And do you take bookings?
Yep.
Great. And Flo, please feel free to let people know where Silo is.
Silo is in Hardware Street, 123 Hardware Street.
In the city.
So
you
between
have a
Lonsdale and Little Lonsdale. Website is going to be on Buy Yoast. So you go onto Yoast's website, buyyoast.com, and all the links for Silo will be attached to that.
Thank you all very much for coming and spending hour in here with me. And hopefully people will be down. Check out all these restaurants. They're wonderful. They're very talented chefs. And we're lucky to have them at the Immersary. So try to get down there too. Thank you for having me here today, everybody. And thank you, Pete Dillon. He'll be back in the hot seat next week. Thank you, Andrew, for helping me, panel. Oh, being the panel man. Okay, guys, see you again. See you another time.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.